Yo, John Fitch here. John Fitch Knows Nothing. This is episode 26. And we have a special guest, Jamie Kilstein, in the house.
Hello. I wish I did not bring my ukulele.
No.
I feel like kind of an asshole now.
I play intro and an outro usually.
This is fucking great.
Yeah, so we do a lot of like be better everyday type of talk here.
Oh, good.
We do cover politics sometimes, but we're more interested in making our lives better.
Yeah, that's all I want to talk about. That's all I want to talk about on my podcast. It's like the times we were actually just looking at the numbers, and whenever I have like a political subject, the numbers do better, right? Because like everyone on social media is pissed off and angry and whatever. But the episodes where I go, you know what, I'm not going to talk about politics, and I talk about depression or mental health or jujitsu or something like that, those are the ones that we actually get emails that are like, you saved my life. So now I'm like, how the fuck do I stop talking about politics? Or do I just trick people? And are all my topics
you're better engagement, and you have more involved listeners when you do it the other way.
Yeah. Well, and also like, I give a shit about
it. Let me
play this
in real quick.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
We're going real deep here.
I got very excited.
Class it up.
That was legit.
I play your stress, I think, because I get a little bit. I've been doing this for a while in front of just people on the internet, but like actual people.
Yeah.
Now it's a little added extra stressor.
Oh, dude, I know. Good.
That's why I do it. I want to show these guys that it's okay to suck at things.
Oh, I mean, I remember I've been playing, I've done music more than comedy, and
really?
I played in bands forever, and I've played in front of like a lot of people, and I've done stand up on TV. I wrote a fucking song for my girlfriend when we first started dating and was like shaking. Like my voice sounded different. I like sang it at like an octave lower, and it's a way different thing.
Yeah. No, yeah, I'm new to it. I started playing ukulele 9 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm just self-taught through the internet, interwebs.
That's awesome. That's so fucking crazy that you can do it. Like, I used to have to like hunt down like how-to audio cassettes and stuff like that.
No, and it's a big difference. It's like I tried to play a guitar before, and I had like friends that played, and I'd have them show me stuff, and then I couldn't do it. I just said, there's too many strings. Too complicated.
Yep.
And what I found is a lot of the people who were teaching were really arrogant.
Yeah.
So it's just like this.
Yeah.
I was like, are you trying to teach me or are you showing off?
Yeah. Dude, that would always, every guitar lesson is like, if it's an hour, it's like 50 minutes of them shredding and like 10 minutes of you trying to play a G chord.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
It would always happen. It's like, and eventually you could do this. I'm like, I can't. My fingers aren't calloused yet.
Yeah. So the internet is a beautiful thing.
Well, how cool is that? Where it's like, you know, just to the premise of your show, where it's like, if there's something you want to learn, you can do it now. There aren't excuses. And this is actually something. So like the podcast I do is, you know, we talk about mental health and stuff, but it's a lot of political stuff. But then the Patreon episode, we go strictly like mental health and shit like that. And my girlfriend and I literally talked about this today on the Patreon episode where, so you have your normal people who can make excuses, right? About why they're not going to do something, why they're not going to train jujitsu, why they're not going to start eating healthy. But then there's like another level of it, which I used to do, which is smart people excuses, where like I had someone write in today and they're like, I want to start jujitsu, but right now I can only afford to do it one day a week. So I should like probably wait until I can do it longer. Right. Or the people who are like, I want to do jiu-jitsu, but like, I got to go to the gym first to get in shape. And like, it's like an attic brain where you can give yourself intelligent sounding excuses where you feel like you're being pragmatic, but in reality, you still just have to like shut up and go do the thing. And once you do the thing, the rest will work itself out, you know?
Exactly. You've got to action. Like talking about stuff isn't going to do much. Procrastination. You're always trying to put something in between you and the thing you need to get done.
Yeah. And you just have to go do the scary shit and it's going to suck for a while and then you're going to get good and it's going to be great.
One thing I learned to deal with some of that stuff is I read a book on neuro-linguistic programming.
Yeah, sure.
And they give you like some mental tricks on how to visualize through those things you're putting, those roadblocks you're putting in between you and your goal.
Yeah. So this is something I've been obsessed with recently where I think, again, a lot of smart people, when they hear the word manifesting, right? They think about their like crazy ex-girlfriend who thought she was a fairy in her past life and like, you know, started dating you because you were a Taurus. And in reality, and a lot of that is like bullshit sounding, right? It's like you read The Secret and it's like, if you visualize it, energy will come and it will happen. But there's a way to do it without that hippie shit. There's a way to just use
basic one step. That's like the first step.
Exactly. So it has to be
realizing where you're going.
Right. So it's, if you think of it more like sports psychology, then it sounds a little more like scientific. So like, I totally forgot.
You could, how do you visualize yourself accessing the back and sinking in the rear naked choke? You could mentally drill that over and over and over again. It's going to make you sharper in the physical world.
Well, there was that study done where they with like basketball players with free throws, where they had one group practice, they had one group visualize, and one group did nothing, and the group that visualized it scored the most. Now, everybody was a basketball player. It's not like no one was, but the people who visualized were like pro basketball player, like the Harlem Globetrotters
I had a sports psychology class in college at Purdue, and they talked about visual healing, like imagining blood going to the injury, like white blood cells, like the rebuilding tissue. Like they told you, like they had, you know, studies that showed people that would heal faster when they did those methods.
Yeah, a lot of it is fucking legit. I mean, the two examples I'll give is one to what you were saying. I mean, the times that you wake up and you're just being a dick and you're in a shitty mood and someone goes, how are you? And you go, I guess bad or busy or whatever. You will feel yourself start to like, your body starts to go along with what you're verbalizing, right? As opposed to the time you're like, things are fucking great. Then you start to actually feel great. And when you feel great, you start to do great things. Like what I remembered, and I totally forgot about this because I've been doing this a lot recently, the positive thinking, and it's been saving my ass.
It's your mind. You're in control of it.
100%. And so
I have this big poster here in my garage over the squat rack. It says, it's real big. It says, it's your fault.
That's so good. That's so good. Fault. But it's true, man. And like, so back with the whole like energy thing, the craziest example, and this is before I read anything about positive thinking or sports psychology or manifesting or whatever you want to call it. The craziest example, and I literally forgot about it until today when I was doing this podcast, was when I became friends with Robin Williams. Someone told me he was in town the day I was performing. And dude, there was no reason that I don't have any, I couldn't think of any connections to him. There's no reason he would know who I was. And I remember pacing back and forth by like the docks in San Francisco. And I just was like, I could picture and feel him coming to the show and what it would be like to have him there. And I just knew for certain that it was going to happen. So now, did that mean that my energy brought him there? No. But because I had that positive belief that I could do it, it made me think about it more realistically. And then I remembered I could probably text this guy who knows another guy who knows Robin And then I did it, and then it all happened. And you know, when I got to the club, I told the woman who ran the club, I was like, put Robin on the guest list. And she gave me this kind of like look. But it wasn't because my chi manifested his chi. It was because I had belief in it. Because I had belief in it, I accessed like stuff I wouldn't have thought about if I was like, it'll never happen. I made those phone calls. I sent those text messages. Then it happened. So you have to, if you don't have the belief, then your brain's not even going to let you figure out routes to get there. You're just going to be like, well, fucking what's the point? And then you'll never know.
So you had, it's something I've struggled with, and you briefly touched on here, is the ability to use power, like the power of network.
Yeah.
Right. Sometimes we build these networks, we meet somebody, we know somebody, but we're like, oh, well, you know, they're busy.
Right.
Or they would never do that.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, trusting in the fact that you possess some amount of power.
Yeah.
The ability to even create certain networks.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is a lot of really talented, kind people are also the ones who go, I don't want to bother anyone. And they're trying to be nice.
Yep.
And a lot of very mediocre people fucking hustle.
Yep.
And you have to find that middle ground, because there are times when I haven't talked about Robin a ton, but there were times where I caught myself and I would be like, man, the last like four times I contacted him were about me. And so I would make sure I could be like, hey, how are you? Like, you know, as stupid as it sounds, like, do you need anything from me, you know, or whatever. And like, you don't want to be that guy who you're only asking for things, right? Yep.
You gotta provide value.
Yes, but at the same time, even if that value is just friendship, just checking in. At the same time, though,
yep.
The people who don't ask for things, you have to make sure, you know, are you doing it because you're telling yourself you're being a nice guy and you don't want to bother, but is it really because you don't believe in yourself and you're afraid of rejection? And then what's that middle ground? What's that you have to partly believe in yourself. So I always say, like, when I teach jiu-jitsu, it's like you have to be like half a self-hating neurotic comedian and half Kanye West. You have to like be able to doubt yourself and question yourself and like get better. But you also have to have this like wild belief that you're the fucking best in the world. Mm-hmm. You can't be too much in the other direction, in either direction.
I say you have to that Kanye West version of you. That's your ego. Yep, that's your sword.
Yeah,
you have to have your sword.
Yep.
But you don't want to run around waving your sword around.
Yeah. And that's your Woody Allen. Yeah.
You're a crazy asshole.
Yeah.
Like you put the sword in your seat, you keep it on your hip. You know, people can see you've got a sword on you, but you're not swinging it around the halls.
Totally. Yeah, exactly. And like, I think that we are really good at talking ourselves out of doing the scary thing. Whether
everything comes down to the number one rule, which is survive. So right. Like a lot of these things break down into our survival axis, you know, so we feel uncertainty can be death.
Okay. So this literally happened to me this week where I'm starting this. This sounds like I'm just whoring my stuff. But again, I have value. I'm starting this jiu-jitsu podcast, right? With that big Instagrammer, Because Jitsu. And we want to have you. We haven't launched yet. We're launching December 2nd, but we already interviewed like Kenny Florian, Huron Gracie, and we have a ton of people.
I'm sharing a screen with your
my Instagram
right now.
Yep. And what I realized was that, you know, what we were talking about before, I'm actually happy when I'm talking about jiu-jitsu and health, and I'm not really happy when I'm talking about politics, right? So, yep. So we're starting this jiu-jitsu podcast, and I was invested in it. Oh, yeah, there's the Epstein choke. That's my first jiu-jitsu instructional, which, again, I had so much fun fucking recording. And what happened last week, so I was excited about this jiu-jitsu podcast, right? But I was like, you know, it's just going to be another podcast I do. Cool, cool, cool. But then what happened was the political podcast last week lost $1,500 a month, which is like rent. It's a lot of fucking money.
Yeah.
And even though I'm more excited about the jujitsu podcast than the political podcast, I love jujitsu has literally saved my life. I was like, it's kind of niche. Is this going to be dumb? Whatever. Once we lost that money, my girlfriend and I were like, you know what? Let's throw fucking right now. Like the political podcast is still growing and doing great, but we're like, let's fucking just hunker down and make this jujitsu podcast huge. And dude, the shit we've done and the success we've had in like 3 or 4 days with both our podcasts, the political one, the Jamie Kilstein podcast, and then Rear Naked Radio, this new jujitsu one, is so much bigger because we got into survival mode. And when your life
comes comfortable, people.
Yes. When your life comes crashing down, or when you rock bottom or whatever, you have two choices where you're like, well, I either fucking kill myself or I become better than I was before this shit hit the fan. And like, dude, we need that money. But honestly, I'm like, once we get successful doing the things we love, it's going to be so much better than worrying about this one guy who can pull out $1,500 at one point. So like that survival instinct kicked in, and like, it sucks right now, but we are going to be happier and more successful for it in the long run. And so it's all about how can you access that survival mentality without being panicked and acting from scarcity, actually doing it from like, this sucks. So how am I going to not only work harder, but end up happier than I was before the sucky thing happened?
Well, I think a lot of time the scarcity mindset gets us dependent on the regular income type stuff, you know, when we're supported by a sponsor or we have an employer, instead of thinking, you know, what else can I get to bring in more value, more money, do more stuff, you know, we get comfortable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how many people are in jobs they hate and they just assume like, well, this is what life has to be. I have to be in this shitty 9-to-5 job. And then I have to go home and take it out on my mediocre wife and have shitty kids to keep us in the relationship.
Yeah. Like I got somebody on one of my podcasts one day, a hater came on and was like, you don't have very many followers or subscribers because you do things your way instead of the way. And the way was like in quotes.
What does that even mean?
Exactly. I was like, what is going through your head?
Well, what's ironic is like, okay, so let's talk about podcasts. Yeah. If we talk about podcasting, there's this little up and comer. We'll use Joe Rogan as an example. If Joe Rogan didn't exist right now, right? Yep. And let's say Joe Rogan was just like a B-level comic. Like, let's say it was me, right? And I went to my agent and I go, hey, I want to do a podcast. And he goes, cool. So it's going to be like an hour. I'm like, nah, fuck that. It's going to be like 3 hours. And he's like, all right, well, who are you going to interview? Fighters? Cause you're a UFC guy. And I was like, sometimes I'm going to interview fighters one day and then maybe like, Bernie Sanders the next day. And then like, fuck it, Alex Jones. And then I'll have like 5 days of hunters that nobody knows about. Mm-hmm. Like the agent would be like, get the fuck out of my office. There's no way I'm going to do that. The reason the show is successful is not because America had a yearning to hear hunters and learn more about the ketogenic diet. It's because Rogan will strictly interview people that he cares about. So because of that, the interviews are so much more genuine.
He's genuinely curious.
Yes. And so that's not the way. At the time, the way was hour long comedy podcasts, and it was like much more organized and had segments and whatever. All of the people who make it, all of our heroes from, you know, Prince and Jimi Hendrix to the best comics in the world, Carlin and Hicks, to podcasters like Rogan, they got
great explorers.
Yeah, they got huge because they didn't go the way, you know, every comedian who has hacky, you know, jokes, it's like, maybe they'll get on TV before I will, but like, you want to be the person who's going to be remembered. You don't want to just be like an average person that spikes and then goes away. The problem slash ironic thing slash maybe good thing is the people who are doing something different, it's always way fucking harder for them in the beginning. Henry Rollins told me once, he goes, just don't quit. Thousands of people quit a day. And if you just don't quit, you'll make it by default. It's not the most inspiring, but like it's fucking true. You know, you just have to stick with it.
That's Henry Rollins, words of wisdom for sure.
Well, yeah. Just don't quit. Thanks, dude.
Just don't quit.
Yeah.
Just don't quit. And get better every day. I think that's, those two need to go together.
100%.
If you suck and you keep doing it for 50 years, you're still going to suck.
Well, once again, this is the balance of that, like Kanye West, Woody Allen, right? Yeah. Like you have to, you can't be delusional. You can't be doing the same thing that sucks every day. Like if I was a comic and every day I did the same set and that set bombed and I was like, I'm doing it my own way. It's like, well, that's delusional. But if I'm like, I know that I can get better, and I'm going to tape my sets and I'm going to change the things that aren't working and I'm going to improve every day. But my voice is something special. I just have to mold it. It's like that's the middle ground, right? Because there are people who won't quit, but they also won't learn or they won't take advice or they won't improve. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it's great to do something different, but you actually have to work even harder and be a fucking scientist and figure out what's working and what's not, you know, and then get better every day. Not just be like a stubborn asshole.
Exactly. So for some of my guys who haven't listened to you before and don't know who you are, can you go back? Let's go over your history a little bit because you... Oh. Or traditionally, what we call left-leaning.
Sure.
Right? Politically.
We found ourselves more in the center as of late.
But yeah. So can you give a brief history of kind of what you went through? Because you kind of like forced to into a red pill politically a little bit.
Yeah, we'll do my sad story. I was saying, I was telling this to my friend the other day, where like I miss the days where when I would do a podcast or like a TV thing, I'd be introduced as like, this next guy's a hilarious comedian. You've seen him on Conan, Jamie Kilstein. And now my intros are like, this next man has gone through a heroic journey and somehow has survived. And I'm like, it's like way more depressing. So I was a stand-up comic. I was left-leaning. When I started stand-up, I was left-leaning in the sense of like, I guess like Bill Hicks and George Carlin, who nowadays, if you listen to a lot of the comics we loved, Carlin or Richard Pryor straight up would have been Me Too'd and canceled because like his most famous special, he talked about domestic abuse and addiction and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Carlin, a lot of his stuff kind of is like not more right wing, but very like anti PC culture.
Yeah.
And you know, nowadays with comedy, it's like the people who are tweeting about Chappelle are like my conservative TV host friends, and liberals are mad at him. Whereas 10 years ago, he was a hero to the left. So like everything's all fucked up. But I considered myself liberal at first because to me, liberal was just like, I don't want like institutions to tell gay people who they can love. I don't think we should go to war with people who aren't a threat to us. I mean, these are things that a lot of my conservative and libertarian friends agree with now, right? Like, don't be a bigot. Don't be an asshole. Let's figure out the best way to help people if they're struggling. War is bad unless it's necessary, et cetera, et cetera. What happened was I started to get like famous-ish talking about those issues, but then it kind of plateaued because it was under the George Bush administration and it wasn't popular to be political. So I was the guy everyone in the industry would be like, oh man, super edgy, love what you say. And I go, cool, you want to work together? And they're like, oh no, I'd get fucking fired. Absolutely not. So that's kind of like where I was. And then like even under Obama, I'm not allowed back on Conan. Like my Conan appearance, it went well if you want, like people are laughing and clapping, but I yelled about drone strikes for like 5 minutes on the Kobe Bryant episode. But it was under Obama. If it was drones under Trump, I'd be a billionaire. If it was drones under even Bush, maybe.
Yeah.
But Obama, everyone was like, we're happy now, you know? Mm-hmm. So at the same time, I have this political podcast. The political
scandals.
Yeah, exactly. The political podcast starts getting more social justice warrior because we're getting less comedy fans as I'm kind of plateauing with comedy. We're getting more progressive fans. Before I know it, fucking Rogan and I are fighting about feminism. I lose all my comedy fans, but the podcast is picking up because we were sort of like some of the first call out culture people. Like that was me. I was on that side. And a lot of it came because I felt like I was failing. And I was like, well, comedy hates me and these people like me. And I still feel like I'm doing the right thing. And I don't realize that a lot of it is because I'm fucking depressed and miserable. Then, and I've talked about this ad nauseum, so I'm not like dodging it. It's like, you can go see my most recent Rogan or Bert Kreischer show or whatever. I had this like dumb affair because I was in a failing marriage who I hosted the podcast with. I spent years on this podcast going hashtag believe all women. And then, and then some
really,
shit was
all of them,
all everyone. All, everyone. And then, yep. And then some shit was said about me and I was like, hashtag don't believe that woman. Like there was no way I could defend myself. I was kind of in this corner. And to be clear, I was never accused of like being a fucking creep or touching someone inappropriately, or it was all like dumb consensual one night stands. But because I had touted myself as this like righteous male feminist, normal dating, normal one night stands turned into
an act predatory of the patriarchy.
Yeah, which is to me, it was more condescending and paternalistic to women. Who like one of the girls was like,
well, the night. The theory would be that it's because it one night stands, girls who do a one night stands are standing in the way of a girl's sexual strategy of finding a provisioner.
Sure.
They can get the milk for free.
Yeah. And like, but it was like, it was weird shit. It was like, he flirted with someone on direct messages, but like, I didn't send my dick. There was nothing sexual. It was like, we were flirting. And then there was another girl who said, it was a really special night. It was the safest I felt with a man. But then weeks later, he called me a road fuck on his podcast, which I didn't, because Jezebel, who wrote the article, said Jezebel could not find the quote. And it's like, right, because I'm not talking about smashing road pussy on my feminist podcast that I host with my wife. That's an insane thing. But even if I did say that, I'm an asshole. That's not emotional abuse. But now when you Google me, if you don't read the article, and I still lose work for this, it says like sexual misconduct, predatory behavior, and emotional abuse, which sounds like I'm a fucking monster. So that's what happens. So I would like to say that I became more centrist because I read Jordan Peterson, but I was sort of like forced out. And you know, to bring it back to the premise of your podcast, is I made that decision where I was like I was suicidal, and I had a girlfriend at the time who supported me and kind of got me out of that. But I was like, I either kill myself or I try to become better. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's not like I was a sexual predator and I could be like, I'm going to stop doing that. I wasn't. So I'm like, how do you become better when the shit you're accused of?
Stop.
Yeah, yeah. But how do you become better when the shit you're accused of you didn't do? And so I was like, I just want to better myself as a man. And even saying those words, that's not something you say in progressive circles because masculinity is really bad, right? So yeah,
you're not allowed to even be open about helping other men be better men.
No, which
is, you're doing what? Why are you such a misogynist?
Right, which is crazy.
You should be helping women be better men.
Right, and it's one of it's the classic help women be better men. That is a Jordan Peterson quote. Help women be better men. And so I, you know, was kind of like, I don't have a podcast anymore. I wasn't going to perform. I got off all my social media. And before Rogan had me back on the show to be kind of like, you know, our like makeup friendship episode, I just threw myself into jiu-jitsu. And I started coaching at Henzo Gracie LA. Mm-hmm. And I realized, and it was the first time I had male role models. It was the first thing, one, I had male role models. And also, I felt like I was actually helping people. I was like, all of these fucking years that I was screaming at strangers on Twitter, I wasn't helping anyone. But coaching, teaching jujitsu, running the kids program, I'm like, oh, this is actually satisfying. This is actually like, I'm doing something good with my life, even though I'm not like a celebrity or whatever. So, I go back on Rogan's, I do all these things. I assume I'm going to go back to stand up, and I have like a bunch of stand up dates for next year, but it's not what brings me fucking joy. You know, the political podcast that I do now is really cool, 'cause we have a ton of conservatives who like heard me on Glenn Beck, but then we have a ton of liberals who know I'm not a fucking creep. And then we're getting all these new, like Tulsi Gabbard DM me and she wants to do the show. And so the premise of the podcast is we're making fun of shitty liberals and we're making fun of shitty conservatives. And we're kind of like
shitty people. 'Cause the real scam is it's not about left or right, left versus right. It's the predator elite at the top and everybody else.
Yes. And that's what people like Andrew Yang and Bernie Sanders and Tulsi Gabbard are saying. And the left is completely disowning Tulsi Gabbard and Andrew Yang. And it's fucking insane. And so there are a bunch of people who know that, like you said, the elites at the top are fucking all of us over. And it doesn't matter if they're libertarian, if they're a progressive Democrat. We are gathering those people over at the podcast and then starting this new jujitsu podcast. And there's a lot in common. I mean, I just want to gather the fucking weirdos who want to make dope shit, who want to help people, you know, whether it's jujitsu weirdos, which we are, politically tribalist people, comedy nerds. And dude, it's a relief to fucking have a cool, you know, my podcast audience is smaller than the old podcast that used to just scream at people, but these are people I'd actually want to hang out with. And I actually feel like I'm doing good. But part of what, so back to your podcast, part of what really helped me was once I was just doing MMA full time and having these male role models, that's when I was like, all right, I'm going to go listen to some of these like forbidden evil people I wasn't supposed to listen to. And so I listened to Jocko and I listened to Peterson. And dude, being a 37-year-old and being like, I should make my fucking bed because you listen to Jordan Peterson.
Yes.
That is a humbling moment. Yeah. But I was like, that's what everyone is fucking afraid of. This
exactly.
Guy?
It's such a simple ideas that are not, they're not new. He's just like restating them and being like, guys, like, yeah, why wouldn't you do these things? Why wouldn't you do these basic things? Like,
well, and
the idea of making your bed and having a place of order that you come back to, your room. What does your room look like? Like, do you come home every day and like your room's chaos? Like, right. that's how you go to bed at night. That's how you wake up every morning is in chaos.
Well, and it's
no wonder you suffer from anxiety.
Yeah, dude. And it's also like, I realized that a lot of these things that I thought were these like evil right-wing talking points, like victim culture or pull yourself up by your bootstraps or whatever, I'm like, these are good things. Mm-hmm. And it's okay that it came from a man, and it's okay if you're fucking liberal. And I realized that, like, even though I'm a white guy, I was totally still doing that victim culture stuff where, you know, now if I feel depressed, I don't like hold in my feelings, but I go, all right, I see what's happening. I recognize what's happening. How do we go make things fucking better? Whereas before on the left, I would
for you.
What's that?
A little bit of stoicism for you.
Yeah. Well, as opposed to like on the left, I would tweet that I was depressed and I would have a bunch of people go, oh, you're perfect. Don't worry. Take a self-care day, go watch Netflix. And then I would continue to be depressed because I wasn't doing anything useful, and it would keep going on. And then being depressed almost became part of my identity because whenever I talked about it, I knew I would get sympathy knew I would have an excuse, to not fucking do anything. Whereas now I can be like, be a fucking man, dude. And again, still be vulnerable. Don't hold in your emotions. Don't be a fucking crazy person who never
deals with them and handles shit.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to get to like the like school shooter level of suppression, but you also don't want to be a bitch. And it's finding that middle ground.
So it's really around, we talk about this here, is creating your frame. What is your frame? Who do you want to be? How do you want to be represented? If you were casting a movie or writing a movie, like what would your character, how do you want it to look? How do you want it to do and behave?
Right.
And then do the work it takes to match that frame.
Yeah, exactly. You have to have those goals. And when you can, I heard Aubrey Marcus say this the other day. I think it was probably when they were on like ayahuasca or something. But like they were talking about seeing the exact person that you want to be walking towards you. So like, what do they look like? Mm-hmm. What is their love life? What is their job? How do they carry themselves? What's their posture? And every day be like, how do I work to become that person? Or am I going to let that person down? Am I just going to be
the reps?
Yeah. And that's all it is. And you never regret it. No one ever regrets going to the gym. No one.
I wish I wouldn't have talked to those girls at the bar last night.
Right. It's like you either have a fight. David Tell said that once.
Worst night ever.
Well, so David Tell is like one of my favorite comedians. And he always, I forget if he said this to me or if he said this in an interview, but he said, you either have a good set or a good story. And that made me so much more fearless with my stand-up, where it's like, yeah, you go to talk to those girls, it's either going to be a great night or you're going to fucking completely blow it. And it's hilarious the next day. Nothing is funnier than that. I went out with a rock star buddy of mine in LA once, and I watched him get rejected so cold at the bar. And like, it probably didn't feel good, but the next day we were laughing hysterically about it. And that bonding that me and him had among like two dudes and him striking out, it's fucking hilarious. That's arguably better than if he went home with like some boring girl at a bar, you know?
You don't catch a fish every time you throw a line in the water.
Right, exactly.
Fishing would be boring.
Oh my God. Totally. Going
every single time? Come on.
Yeah, it's like the bumpers at bowling. It's like you know you didn't earn that, kid.
So we've got what is your rank in jiu-jitsu right now?
Brown belt.
What do you have a projection of when you might be in black belt range? Brown belt.
I went in that weird, I had one of those weird gaps that kind of fucked me. Like my Marcelo Garcia class all have black belts now. I left Marcelo's when I was like about to get my brown belt. And so when I went to Henzo's, I had 3 years, I mean, which is good. It'll make me better, but I had 3 years where I kind of had to start over again because like they didn't know me. So,
and they don't want to like, if you jump ship again.
Right. And it's,
you have to put in a little extra time.
Well, and also like every time I submit a black belt, it's all Marcelo's games. Like I have zero Henzo game. I mean, I learned a lot. I learned a lot of good principles from there, but like my game's always going to be Marcelo's. So now that I moved to Arizona, I'm actually at a 10th planet for the first time, which is fucking cool because there's part of me that, I'm like, I'm a black belt in these areas and I can submit black belts and UFC guys with like these moves, but I'm a fucking white belt with like my guard compared to like these 10th planet guys. Right. So it's probably going to be, I mean, I'm probably going to get a black belt like 5 years after I should, but I'm also, again, when you make it about just how do I get better every day? I just wanted to get that fucking purple belt off, man. It was like white because it was falling apart so much and my dumb four stripes and a stupid tape. So I'm like, once I got a brown belt, I'm like, I'm fucking fine. I'm just going to like fuck up black belts when I can. Eventually I'll get it. But like, I might have to learn the whole 10th planet system before I get my black belt, which like, man, when I get it, like it is fucking earned. But my goal is to get it faster than I should from 10th planet and to get in like 2 years from now is what I'm shooting for.
Nice.
Yeah.
When is the launch? You remember before, when is the launch of your jiu-jitsu?
So it's called Rear Naked Radio. It's going to be on YouTube and iTunes and Stitcher and all that stuff. So the links are in my bio now on Instagram. My Instagram is just the Jamie Kilstein, or I'm sure a ton of you guys follow Because Jitsu. He has the links up too. It's going to launch this December 2nd. Kenny Florian's the first interview we have, and it's fucking great. He's like really funny and like, we get really deep. I mean, my problem with jiu-jitsu podcasts, I mean, there aren't a ton. I legitimately think we're going to be the first one that like breaks into the mainstream, because I want to get big enough where we get fucking Rogan and like Rob Wolf wants to come on. And I want to start getting people who aren't just like esoteric competitors, you know? And the problem is whenever I like YouTube, like Gordon Ryan, jiu-jitsu interview, it's always like some esoteric interview where they're talking about like a tournament that happened like fucking 2 months before. And I want to interview people about their mindset. I want to interview people, evergreen shit, you know, like how do you mentally come back from a loss? Like that's what I want to ask the best people in the world. My co-host is really funny too, but we're not trying to be funny. We're not like two jiu-jitsu guys. It's like, all right, we're doing a comedy podcast. So that means I have to like, fucking call that guy gay. And like, you know what I mean? Like we'd rather be vulnerable and like talk about the times we wanted to like quit jiu-jitsu and like what we did to get past it. Kind of what you're trying to do. I just think that's far more fucking interesting. And then like having Huron Gracie, who's the fucking grandson of Helio on, having him compared to like, we're going to have Gordon Ryan and Gary Tonin and Eddie Bravo. Yeah,
different eras.
Yeah, like I want to talk to like a traditional fucking Gracie about what he thinks about shit talking and sports jiu-jitsu, and then I want to talk to these modern guys and compare it. So it's the thing I'm the most excited about. I mean, this is an example of me sort of putting my advice to the test, where I'm like, don't do the thing you think you have to do, which for me is politics. It's like, if you love jiu-jitsu, even though jiu-jitsu isn't as mainstream, go do jiu-jitsu and the fucking money will find you, the living will find you, because you're actually doing something you care about.
Yes. Let's I got some questions here for you from some of my regulars.
Oh God. Please don't ask any that have the word cuck or snowflake.
At Boxer One says, ask him about his experiences showering in AKA.
Oh my God. Wait, did I tell the story?
No, I don't know. He's just,
this person must listen to my podcast or was in the shower with me at AKA. Okay. So I came to AKA to train with you. And when I came, Khabib was there getting ready for a fight. I had never met Khabib. First of all, I've never been in front of a man who was just like, you could sexually assault me with no consequences right now, where I had my boxing gloves on and he seemed very nice. But my first interaction with him is he just goes, water. And I go, I didn't think he was talking to me. And I was like, water is a thing we drink. Like, I didn't know what he wanted. And he was like, water. And I was like, do you want me to get you water? And he goes, water. And he points down and there's a water bottle. And I go, oh, he wants me to hand him the water. So I pick up the water and I go to hand it to him. And he just goes and like points to his mouth. And so like,
he had his gloves on.
I know he had his gloves on. No, he's not being an asshole. I'm just terrified and confused. Look, to go from I've never introduced myself to a man to just like putting a bottle in his mouth was like, I think a big jump. I thought it was great. And so I was like, all right, I'm feeding him water. So I'm like, I got through the first thing. I haven't pissed off Khabib. He doesn't know I'm a Jew. We're great. So then I go into the shower and I'm already like, I wasn't an athlete in high school. I never showered with people. I still get kind of like fucking weird, but I'm in the shower and I'm like, all right, do people go full naked in the shower? And I'm trying to like figure it out. And I'm like, you know what? Just be a fucking man. So I go full naked and suddenly Khabib and all of his team comes in and they're all wearing like bathing suits because of like the modesty. And I'm like, oh man, I fucked up. Like, I don't know what to do. And I'm like, I got to get fucking out of here. I'm like, is this a sin? Am I offending them? And so like, I'm like kind of like covering my junk, whatever. When I was like, I'm a piece of shit. I can't believe I did that. I go to leave the shower and fucking God bless him, Luke Rockhold just struts in, dick swinging. And I was like, I almost high-fived him. I'm like, do we touch dicks? I feel like Luke definitely made me feel better about the situation. And yeah, walked in like the study was. And that's my AKA shower story.
Oh, that's funny. Abbas Wood also says, what are your thoughts on pre-training anxiety?
Do you think he means pre-training like he's never done jiu-jitsu or like before classes or before?
I think before, maybe before class. Maybe he's just getting into it.
Yeah. So.
Because that can be a thing because you're going into a new group of people and like they're trying to choke you.
Oh, dude, I still get it. When I go to a new, I had to call myself out. I went up to my coach the other day and I've just strictly been playing my like A game at this school. Because when I came in, everyone was like, he's the Marcelo guy. I got hyped so much that I'm like, I don't want to give up a point to anybody. And I haven't. And because of that, I'm like, fuck, I got to start putting myself in bad situations and playing guard. And like, it's not like I'm being like cocky. It's that I'm like, I don't want to lose that like mystique, you know, so I still get it. If I roll with someone I don't know, I'm like, yeah, you're like, I guess I'm about to fight a stranger and like, I hope he's not a dick. And so the first thing you can do is one, like your body, right? So just literally taking deep breaths, you know, taking six deep breaths and feeling your like heart rate calm down is one thing you can do. Something I heard that's really cool is, you have the same inner feeling with anxiety and excitement. So when you get those butterflies from anxiety, you can also use your brain and be like, but that's also how I feel when I'm excited. So you can be excited to train. Two, a lot of it is ego. Most of it is ego. Most of it is I'm nervous because I don't want this like dickhead blue belt to tap me out and like tell all of his friends, you know, like, dude, I roll so much better when I'm going with like black belts or UFC fighters. Cause I'm like, the bar is low. I either submit a UFC fighter and that's awesome, or like Fitch kicks my ass and that's expected. But if I go with like some big guy who I don't really like, and maybe he's like a purple belt and he wants to tell people he tapped out this brown belt, it's not as fun. And so you have to like be like, is this really a big deal? Or am I being like an idiot in my head? And then I think it comes back to what you were saying before. When the goal is just get better every day.
Yep. Objective. That's it.
Yeah, that's it. Like
controlling your objective, being you know, your outcome disassociated with the outcome.
Yeah,
like, what you're really there for is to get better and like to try new things, to push yourself and to fail. Like you learn the most when you fail, so like you should be pushing yourself to that.
100%. You have to ask yourself, like, what are your goals, right? If your goal as a white belt or a blue belt is tap out the black belt, you are going to leave every day disappointed. And by the way, when you're anxious, when I feel guys like grab onto me like this, or they're going as hard as they can, and I know they're going to gas in 2 minutes, you're not going to learn anything. You're not going to get better. Your goal when you
go in there every day and your goal is to win, and you go in every day and win, but you don't learn anything. You don't put yourself in new situations. You don't grow as a grappler.
Right. Exactly. So like if your goal, instead of beat the black belt or win, if your goal is like, all right, he armbarred me 7 times yesterday, I'm going to get armbarred 6 times, you know? Or if like you can't pass his guard, it's like, maybe you're like, I'm going to get to a point where I can like kick out his De La Riva hook, or like step in a little bit closer, or like just be a little more confident, even if I get swept. That's a win. That's like a victory. You know, I even like, when I see people fucking up, if they're in an arm bar and I see them fucking up the escape and they're just going nuts and they're trying to rip out their arm, I always show them, like, if you're in an arm bar and you're like in your head, all right, I have to rip my arm out, then I have to pass his guard, then I have to submit him, then I have to like go like, you know, take his belt and inform his wife that I am the man of the house now. It's like, all right, well, that's like a lot, right? All you have to do, if you're pulling your arm out, it's not going to work. You just have to get your elbow out. Twist and get your elbow out. Once your elbow's out, which is far less fucking work, now you can go, all right, how do I get my arm out? Or how do I like collapse his legs? And now you go, all right, I did that. How do I start to pass? And if you get one of those things, it's fucking great. But a lot of times when you try to do everything at once because you're just tense and freaking out, it ends up being more work for less reward. Whereas if you can like chill the fuck out, loosen up, feel where your opponent's taking you, you're going to actually accomplish more, even though it feels like you're not like going at like 110%.
Exactly.
Those are good questions.
Really good. This guy's all over. Box One also asks, is any recent books you would recommend? That's a good one.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I'm reading like the cheesiest self, like I'm literally reading a book about like manifesting right now, which I've like never done. I always thought that was like really like woo shit. But it's legitimately changing my life. There's a lot of like YouTubers online who are just like fucking charlatans. But this idea, even if you don't believe any of it, this idea of just believing you already are the person you want to be instead of, again, acting from scarcity. It's Wayne Dyer is the guy, is huge. Even if all of it, even if there's no fucking God and spirituality is all bullshit or whatever, I'm going to be a better person every time I can feel the success already and feel what that excitement would feel like once the jujitsu podcast fucking blows up, or, you know, instead of being like, I wish I had money, which is implying I don't have money. Again, I'm not saying if I think about it, money will drop, but I'm saying that like we lost $1,500 and within a month and within 2 days, when I was like, we're going to be good and I'm going to just do what I want, suddenly the jiu-jitsu podcast happened. The Epstein video blew up. I got a writing gig. We got like, you know, $200 or $300 more from the podcast because we're not acting out of desperation. And I'm like, it's going to be okay. We're going to be better for this. And now we just have to like work. That Wayne Dyer book, or if you just YouTube him, that really helped me a lot. And not a book, but like I will, when I'm like feeling like, what the fuck am I going to do? I'll just watch those like 2 minute Jocko YouTube videos. Like I like hearing him talk more than like I have his books, but I like hearing him more, where like you go watch that like good video of Jocko. Like I am ready to fuck everybody up.
You get over this idea that life is supposed to be easy, or like that's one of the things I took away from Jordan Peterson the most, is like life is just suffering. That's the base life of existence, is struggle and suffering.
Yeah.
It's not happy, fun, comfort.
Yeah. Now I don't think you should take that and then be a total nihilist.
No.
I think a lot of people could take that and be like,
if you want good stuff, like you gotta work for it.
Yeah, and I don't know if Peterson talks about this, but like what I could see if someone told me like life suffering, blah, 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 you could take that and turn it into an excuse not to do anything, an excuse to be lazy or lethargic and be like, well, what's the point? Life's bad. You know, I'm not going to try, as opposed to seeing it like in jujitsu, seeing it as a challenge. I'm going to overcome it
right now. Life could be, I could be mounted right now. Life could be bad right now, but I could oompa.
Yeah.
And then I could, you know, break the guard pass and then I'm mounted.
Yeah. And then how good are you going to feel? That's another piece of advice I want to give too. These are all things that,
but if you just give up and you lay there,
100%. And also like enjoy your victories, like life suffering, sure. But then when something good happens, you got to be grateful for it. And you got to like fucking take it in and enjoy it. Like when we were panicking about money the other day, but I did this Andrew Yang video on Twitter that was just going up to like 50,000 views. It was blowing up. We would also just like look at it and be like, we're fucking killing it. And the more we told ourselves we're killing it, the more ideas we had. And then the more shit we did. And then suddenly the jujitsu video starts taking off. And like, you have to do that. If you're just acting like in the negative and you're like, everything sucks anyway, blah, 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 it's not going to work. So you have to balance that. Everything is hard. It's suffering, but I'm also going to overcome it. And then when I do something awesome, I'm going to appreciate it.
All right. So TJ Zufa says, hey, Jamie, it is unfortunate what happened to you with the whole Me Too situation. I know there's a narrative attached to you right now, but do you think it's slowly being removed?
Yeah. So, I mean, what's cool about it is I mean, the people who have reached out to me the most to be like, yo, that's crazy and that sucks what happened to you have been women. And a lot have been women who have been like actually abused. And they're like, this is fucking insane. And I think there are a ton of women out there who, when they see Al Franken removed from office for like a dumb joke and pretending to grab boobs, but that's put in the same category as Harvey Weinstein, they're like, this is fucking insulting. It's insulting to say that a date and consensual sex is a emotional abuse because you didn't then become that person's girlfriend or boyfriend, or you broke up with them or whatever. Or consensual one night stands is predatory when it's like, no, girls want to have sex too. So that's been really cathartic for me. When I've been talking to regular people outside of my old left wing bubble, there's been no one that was like, hey, it was a little fucked up what you did. Everyone's like, that was fucking insane. And I felt a lot of shame for a long time because anytime your name is, you know, put in the same sentence with like horrible words like abuse or misconduct or whatever, you feel gross. With that said, even this week, this is the first time I did like a left-wing show in a long time. And somebody wrote like, they wrote in, they're like, how can you have Jamie on his show? He's like a sexual predator. And when I saw that again, I started to like relive that. Because when someone's saying something so wildly untrue about you, you're just like, how can people just call me a sex predator? And then the guy goes, the host goes, do you have any evidence? And he goes, well, he wrote for Quillette. And it's like, that's not sex predatory behavior. That's fucking insane. And so when I realized that the people who are still saying that are that fucking dumb, it's helping me a lot.
That's what I said. Like people who slap labels on things, I think it's low IQ, very low IQ.
Yeah. And also like,
well, he wrote for these people. He talked to that guy.
It's insane. And it's also like, by the way, if you're liberal, you want me going on Glenn Beck's show. You want Bernie Sanders going on Fox News, because if you actually care about these issues and you don't just care about looking like the cool kid on Twitter, you want to convince other people who disagree with you why your position is correct. But the left has stopped being they've stopped being intellectual. And they just shame people into believing what they believe. Yep. So like I definitely felt like a little bit of that, like PTSD shame. What I've noticed is anyone who actually reads what happens to me or hears me, they feel bad for me. And I don't want people to feel like I'm not the victim. But it wasn't good. But like, I'm not trying to be the victim, I guess is what I'm saying. But when you Google me, I got to find someone who can help this, and you see the words, most people don't read the article. So I just lost gigs 2 weeks ago because some big corporate comedy chain, you know, just saw those words. And those are very scary words. And so I think in society right now, people are just scared to touch anyone who's controversial. So they just go, well, I would rather just not use them. I'm talking about it much more loosely than I was before, just because the shame is lessening within me. And I've had so many people support me, which I did not have before. But I will say, when I get that occasional old stalker or troll who pops up, or I see that fucking article come up, I definitely get the pit in my stomach and then deep breaths and just have to tell myself.
You gotta find a way to turn that into fuel.
That's right? What I'm doing.
Because every time that shame comes up, you got to turn that, instead of shame, it's like you should feel proud because you're doing something right, because you're triggering the shamers.
Yeah. 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 And I mean, and I had that the other day. I'm like, all right, now I just got to blow this podcast up more and fucking bury these people.
On the right path if you're stirring up the shamers.
Yeah. And the key is to be inspired, but not be bitter, right? Because like I've talked to people who are like bitter. Like other people who were canceled, and I'm like, that I can't do. I can't suddenly be like, all women are whores podcast, you know, because that's not gonna make me better. If I could just focus on like, how do I become better? People are gonna say shit, but fuck them. I think that's like the healthier approach. That was like a really thoughtful way to put the question. So thanks to TJ for that.
Oh, that's good. Okay, TJ's got another one here. It says, Jamie, that's very interesting. So being nervous could be an ego thing. I had a higher belt person tell me I looked nervous before we started rolling, but I didn't see it until later.
What a daunting, terrible thing for a higher belt. That was like some mind game shit. Like, you look scared right now. Yeah.
Why are you shaking, buddy?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's ego. Look, I was like a 140 pound, like white belt when I went to Marcello's like 10 years ago. And one of the reasons I got so good is because I didn't tap anybody out till I was a fucking blue belt. So that was a year of getting demolished and the shit kicked out of me. And my turning point was when I accepted that and was like, I'm just going to be more technical and I'm going to pay more attention. When you're tense and nervous, like I was saying before, you're not going to be able to feel what the other person's doing. So like if someone catches me in something, I want to know how I did it. I want to be relaxed enough when someone has my back that even if I don't know how to escape, I can be like, all right, we're going to try to go to the left. And then if the choke gets tighter, I go, nope, we're going to go to the right. And like actually retain the information. If I'm just seeing red and fucking tense the whole time, I'm going to fuck up and I'm not even going to know how I fucked up. So how are you going to learn from that?
Excellent. Let's get one more. Adam, Adbox One asks if Jamie is a Brendan Schaub fan.
When they book me on Fighter and the Kid, I will be a Brendan Schaub fan. Right now, I've just had very nice, lovely emails with Brian Callen. But I met Brendan once. We were on a show together. It was this crazy lineup at the store. It ended up being like, I forgot Russell Peters also does stand up or also does jujitsu. Mm-hmm. So it was like a bunch of like jujitsu comics. It was like me, Rogan, Joey, Tripoli, and fucking Schaub was on it, and Russell. So yeah, Brendan was really nice. But I didn't talk to him a ton, and I haven't watched his stand-up special. If that's
we have we've talked on here. I did a couple live streams when I was doing the Shake Break thing, and
yeah,
I watched somebody made a documentary about Brendan Schaub.
Okay,
and it was an hour-long documentary this guy made to tell us all how Brendan Schaub's not funny. And the only reason
like his comedy do not
The only reason he's successful is because Joe Rogan's his friend.
Jesus.
So I gave a review of the film, and it's just Phil. It's just hater loser mindset, right? Like whatever. This guy accidentally became friends with Joe Rogan. And like,
jeez.
And Joe's the only guy, the only reason he's propped up. I was like, so what, you're jealous of his ability to make friends with like influential people?
Yeah. I mean, this is the bummer.
What exactly is your complaint here?
So like, I'll tie this into cancel culture.
Mm-hmm.
When we spend, like, if that dude's a filmmaker,
like he made an hour long documentary. That's what I was going off about. I was
like imagine if he made a documentary about something he was passionate about.
Yes.
Like what if he like wrote a script? What if he made something artistic?
It's not like a real crime.
Yeah. I mean,
somebody's success. I'm mad at this guy shouldn't be making money.
Right.
He's funny.
Well, and that's the thing with cancel culture in general is we spend our days now going online and instead of searching for things we love, we're searching for people to bury, right? Like instead of seeing Kevin Hart as a successful young black comic who gets to host the Oscars, we go, we got to find something bad he did. And then we find it 10 years ago and then we bury him. And it's like what we're doing online right now is the opposite of sports psychology and positive thinking, right? We're just training ourselves to see the negative and to see where people are bad and to see where they fucked up instead of being inspired by people that we really like look up to and admire. And once I stopped looking for ways to shit on people, and I'm like, you know what, instead of just like reading the news and coming up with who I'm mad at and tweeting my hot takes, it's not as popular and my Twitter won't be as popular, but I'm like, I'd rather watch like a Jocko video in the morning and be fucking inspired by someone than I would just search out negative bullshit, because that carries over into your real life.
It does. Yeah. That was like my, one of my most viewed videos. And then the second video was I made another one to make fun of the people who came on the other first previous video to bitch and moan and downvote it.
That's like, so insane. Yeah. Like, I'm like,
all these guys from Reddit found out I made an anti an anti whatever this video, and they so I went, the one had 750 views and the other one had 1500. So like
hilarious.
They like, I'm like, guys, like there's good stuff you can do with your life. Why waste your time to come and just, you're wrong. Well,
because it's easier to, and this is what I went through too. If I'm just being like morally righteous and attacking other people, mm-hmm. I don't have to put myself out there. If I'm not vulnerable, I can't fail. If I'm just trashing people, then it's like, what's to lose, right? Whereas if you put, if that filmmaker, like, maybe he wanted to do some fucking art piece on like something and he put it out there. And if a bunch of people trashed it, it's like, well, that sucks. But that's also, again, how you get fucking better. If you just spend your time shitting on other people's art, like, that just tells me you wanted to be an artist and you were too much of a fucking coward to do it. Like, and really, now you're right. Countless and resentful.
Mm-hmm. Like, you said, instead of being the artist, you became the critic.
Right. Like for me, like I have plenty, if I wanted to be jealous of Brendan Schaub, I'm like, I also went on Rogan. I didn't get, you know, he didn't take me to open for him. He didn't whatever. I could say Brendan already had money and fame, and that's why like it was easy for him. But when I see Brendan, I go, whoa, that's a fucking fighter. Even if I don't think he's a funny comic. And I, like I said, I haven't seen his stuff, but I'm like, well, that's a
fucking- and it's like, he was just getting started and he like, it was fun. I was entertained.
Yeah. Well, it's also like, it's badass that like he could have coasted and just, but he could have coasted. He could have coasted and just done fight shit and commentary, but instead he went and did something else that's really fucking hard and was like, I'm gonna start from scratch. He actually has more to lose, because when you see a famous person bomb on stage, you get to go on the internet as opposed to just unfamous open micers. And like, yeah, he did a fucking brave thing and it worked for him, so like, fucking good on him.
Yeah, I think too, that's great. He's definitely kind of inspiring that he would. Just the path he's taken, I think, is impressive.
Yeah, you
know,
for sure.
From one sport to another, find, you know, making the most out of each situation and then trying this out. Like, it's just, it's good to see. And if people want to shit on that, like, you're just a loser.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Like, just you're a loser, period. Like, the guy made a video about, like, Amy Schumer or somebody. What's that even her name? I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? I didn't watch it. You know why? I don't care.
No, like, just
I don't find that person entertaining, but at the same time, I don't need to be like, oh, yes, somebody's going to bring her down. I can't wait to watch it.
Just fucking
not watch it.
Go make something. Everyone take a deep breath and go make something. Go make something you're proud of.
Find something you like and you want to watch.
Yes.
Yes. All right, Jamie. Any last pitches before you got to go?
Twitter's Jamie Kilstein. Instagram's where I'm actually happy and will be posting fight stuff. And it's not as big a following, so I would love that. It's the Jamie Kilstein. I'm going to keep posting all the jiu-jitsu videos. And then the podcast. My podcast is Jamie Kilstein Podcast. You can go to jamiekilsteinpodcast.com. It's on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. And then the new jiu-jitsu podcast, December 2nd, is Rear Naked Radio, with me and Drew Weatherhead, because jitsu, and all the links are in my Instagram bio.
Awesome. Thanks for coming on.
Dude, thank you so much.
It's great having you.
I'm gonna stay till the end of this song.
You know it sounds funny, but I just can't stand the pain. The girl I'm leaving you tomorrow. Seems to me, girl, you know I've done all I can. You see, I big stole and I borrowed, yeah, I'm easy, I'm easy like Sunday morning.
This is my favorite thing ever.
I'm easy like Sunday morning. Why in the world would anyone want to put the chains on me? I've paid my dues just to make it. I get these ears from nowhere. Mm-hmm. What they want me to be. But I'm not happy when I fake it. No, I'm not. I'm I'm easy like Sunday morning. That's why I'm easy like Sunday morning. I want to be high, so high. See to be the things I do all right. Wanna be free, just me. Ooh, babe. That's why I'm easy, easy like Sunday morning.
Fuck yeah.
Rock and roll.
See you soon, buddy.
See you soon. Thanks for being on.
Thanks, dude. See ya.
All right, guys. Check you later.